Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Our first guest, Edward Rosenfeld, says our brains and bodies try to regulate the full power of our consciousness by acting as reducing valves, but occasionally widening this valve, as humans have sought to do since the beginning of recorded history, gives us a glimpse into the infinite. In 1973, Edward Rosenfeld wrote The Book of Highs and believes the time is ripe to extend and expand that original work with his latest work, The Book of Highs, 255 Ways to Alter Your Consciousness Without Drugs. Edward Rosenfeld, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Good morning. I'm pleased to speak with you. What a great introduction. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. And, you know, your book aside, very interesting, but your story, I think, is as interesting as the book. So can we start there? I mean, first of all, you have run a monthly newsletter for decades called Intelligence, The Future of Computing. Tell us about that quickly, and then we'll get on to the book.
Well, I was one of the founding editors of a magazine some of your older listeners might remember, Omni. And we covered science and science fiction. And it was a beautiful magazine, and I had a wonderful time there. And after I left, having edited a bunch of articles on artificial intelligence and robotics, I became intrigued with the field of artificial intelligence. But the more I looked at it, the more it seemed artificial, until I discovered that several people were basing their computing architectures and potential computing structures on models from neuroscience, from things learned about the brain. And that intrigued me. So in 1984, I started a monthly newsletter called Intelligence, The Future of Computing. And that newsletter ran until the end of last year, every month. And by the time I had completed that run, neural networks were in the news everywhere. Artificial intelligence was being ballyhooed by everyone. And I felt like my meager contributions had done enough, and I needed to move on to other things.
Wow. So you've long been interested in altered states of consciousness, and this goes back before Intelligence and Omni magazine. It goes back to when you were a child with scarlet fever. This is so interesting.
Well, I had several experiences. I like to say my very first drug was ether. I emerged from a tonsillectomy when I was about 2 or 3 years old, saying, "Where's the rabbit? I saw the rabbit. Where did the bunny go?" And a couple of years after that, I got scarlet fever, and my fevers were quite high, 105, 106, I was told. And until I was about 11 or 12, my normal temperature was raised to 99.2. And as a result of that, I had very high fevers throughout all my childhood diseases and experienced time and space distortions, touch distortions, something called pins and needles, where everything I touched felt like it was a pin or a needle. And that led me to believe that consciousness was more plastic than I had ever imagined as a child. And then later, having time distortions happen in a couple of different non-lethal automobile accidents, I realized that the brain is indeed quite plastic in the mind as well.
Edward, you mentioned a moment ago that after you finished your newsletter, once that had ended, and you felt like you had made the totality of your meager contributions to artificial intelligence, you moved on to other things. What other things have you moved on to?
Well, 2 years ago, I was approached to do the new version of the Book of Highs, which came out yesterday, I'm happy to say.
And it has quite a cover.
So that's
I was drawn to the cover. I was just like, this is great.
Yeah,
I'm just showing it to people.
The publisher of the new edition, Workman, did a spectacular job. The paper is heavy stock. I urge your listeners to go to independent bookstores and at least give it a look and feel. It looks great and feels great to me, and I'm very pleased with it. So that's something that's been occupying some of my time. And the next thing I want to move on to is something that I learned about many, many decades ago from Buckminster Fuller, the great inventor and designer, and he suggested that the world could work. And so I'm going to try and do whatever part I can. can do with for the rest of my life in trying to make the world work. Sounds ambitious, but you got to be ambitious to get anything done.
Yes, you do. And speaking of getting things done, you wrote the original Book of Highs back in 1973. And I know this is a big question, but I'm sure you can distill it down into digestible parts. But why do the update? And I'm it's kind of an obvious question, but times have changed. And what was it about the changing times that made you think 2 years ago that this was the time to expand and update the Book of Highs with the new version?
Well, let me go and give you the backstory in answer to that question. I wrote the Book of Highs initially in the late 1960s, and the environment then was the beginning of what became the war on drugs. And people who had never taken any drugs were making laws outlawing drugs, and that smacked to me of prohibition and alcohol, which failed. And I thought, well, they can't legislate consciousness. They can't make laws against consciousness. And I thought I would, you know, gathered together a bunch of altered states of consciousness, several hundred at least, and make a compendium, a little mini encyclopedia. And I was lucky that in 1973 it was published, and it did quite well then. 2 years ago, Workman came to me and said, we think this is a great book that could be updated, and it's a very relevant time to do that update. Several things are going on. Number one, there's the legalization of medical marijuana in the majority of the states of the United States. There's recreational marijuana in many states. Number two, psychedelics, which had been frowned upon for years and not allowed to be even researched, are now, even with government support, being researched for things like people with terminal illnesses and the anxiety and depression that that causes. And number three, we're in the middle of a devastating opioid crisis. And so we just felt that this was the right time to talk about the fact that altered states are quite natural. We do it when we're children and grow up with it. Even when we're infants, we rock ourselves. Toddlers spin around and jump up and down like rock stars. They're exhilarated. They're high, you know. So we have this in us. This is part of who we are. And it seemed like a great time to do a new version of the book. And Workman did a wonderful job with me of updating it.
So you said something interesting a few moments ago, Edward, which is that people were making laws against drugs who had never experimented or had any experience with them. And so I want to ask you about your experience with, you know, you were probably in your 20s or so during this psychedelic era before the war on drugs, which precipitated the war on drugs, I would assume. And so, and in that time, you founded the Natural Church. So this was a religious institution that sought to legalize psychedelics as religious sacraments. So where is the bridge from the use of drugs to altered consciousness without drugs?
Well, the Natural Church lasted for about 2 to 3 years, and along with other people who had started psychedelic churches, we all believed that we would be protected under freedom of religion laws. And even the American Indians' use of the psychedelic sacrament peyote, it took decades for them to win that right, and also the ayahuasca churches that are now also covered by the government and allowed to use psychedelics as a sacrament. And it just seemed to me that if I could establish that these were ordinary, non-ordinary states of consciousness that didn't require drugs, that would kind of level the playing field in a certain way. I couldn't change the laws. I would have done that if I could, but I couldn't. So that was my approach, and that was how I came to do non-drugs. I thought that they can't outlaw these. So.
The book is called The Book of Highs, 255 Ways to Alter Your Consciousness Without Drugs. Our guest is Edward Rosenfeld. And funny, Edward, I literally just got a text message from our station manager saying, did he just say toddlers are high? And the funny thing about that is that, yes, that's what you're saying, that our childlike tendencies are not only push us towards creativity and play, but they also, I mean, part of that and our ability and our tendencies towards creativity and play as children are what you're saying are these altered states. And we get there by, as you say in your book, well, tell us some of those ways in which children get there.
I thought you said it very well. I gave you two examples before, jumping up and down and spinning around.
Yes.
Infants, before they're even on their feet, rock, and they're rocking to change the state of consciousness that they're in. Is a dream state an altered state of consciousness? For some, it is. I think if we observe the way younger children play in the playground and the inventiveness and creativity that goes on and the way they try and enhance, the term I was using before was exhilaration.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm satisfied with that as a category of an altered state.
And Edward, I don't know if it was in Andrew Weil's introduction or in your preface, but somebody talked a lot about this concept, which is the one that you and Lynn are discussing right now, about as a toddler or a child or a newborn, you come in without that regulatory system, without that filter that is trying to constrain our consciousness. And we are probably, I would assume, in greater touch with the infinite possibilities or the infinite, as it was called. And so what you're saying is by altering our states, we are taking off that regulatory system and once again stepping into a greater and closer connection to the infinite.
As you introduced this segment in talking with me about the notion of a filter that we have, that filter is mainly cultural. We learn things culturally. And I'm glad you brought up Andy Weil's foreword to the book. That was the original foreword, word for word, that ran in 1973. And when I reread it a couple of years ago, I thought, wow, this works perfectly. And Andy Weil's whole point is that this is the natural mind. This is the natural state. We yearn for these altered states, and we pursue them. And people who try and regulate and legislate against them are people who have, I think, outdated notions of hedonism, and that you can't get something that's pleasurable unless you suffer for it.
You know, it's funny, when I read Andy Weil's preface, I did the same thing. I got to the end, and I saw 1973, and I was like, wow, I never would have guessed that. It was so appropriate and perfect for these times. And so, in these times, is there anything in your new updated version that kind of took you by surprise, either in the way that it fit back in 73 and it still fits today, or how things have changed to possibly create a new item out of the 255 ways to alter your consciousness without drugs?
Well, most of the new items are in the last section of the book, Devices and Machines. And they've occurred because of the advances in computing and electronics technologies. I'm glad you brought that up because one of the things I like to talk about is virtual reality, which is one of the new additions to the book. And it brings up the whole notion that these highs are not without risk, some of them. I don't think jumping up and down or spinning around or watching your breathing and focusing on your inhalations and exhalations as you do in mindfulness meditation, I don't think that's going to hurt others or hurt yourself. But I had an experience day before yesterday when somebody said to me, oh, I tried on virtual reality gear and I was flying like a drone over a landscape and suddenly I got motion sickness and I had to take the thing off. I was nauseous.
Right.
So, you know, another good example is firewalking. A group of people can be given instructions on how to walk over hot coals. Some of them walk over, reach the other side, not having any burns, and feeling terribly accomplished and high from the experience of having walked over coals without being burned. Other people receiving the same instructions, their feet get burned, and they scamper to get off the coals. So you really have to be careful, and not everything works for everybody.
Hmm. The Book of Highs. So there, as I'm leafing through the 255 ways, and these are great because you can just pick up this book and turn to page 114 and you know, a couple paragraphs explains what, for example, tensing is. And so during this whole interview, I've been tensing my muscles and relaxing them. And it feels really good. So they're the simple things.
That's great.
And, you know, I would say in this mountain town where most of the people here practice some kind of sport, they're outside. You know, some people say my church is the outdoors. We're accustomed to experiencing that rush of endorphin when we do intense exercise. So we know what this is about. And I'm wondering if... you're hoping that your readers will have some amount of, it will validate their activities to achieve this altered state, and that they'll start looking at it as altered state instead of just like, oh, I feel good when I run.
I think feeling good when you run or an altered state are equal to me.
Yeah.
I hope people will be intrigued by the book and will dip in and out of it. I think that's the best way to read the book.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Another interviewer told me he had read the whole book, and I was shocked. So, but I think there's a lot of food for thought there, and I think it will validate a great many people's experience. I spoke to a woman yesterday who was talking about she never got high and she never took drugs and never did this and never did that, and I asked her what did she do that gave her great pleasure, and she said gardening. And I compared her state when she was gardening to the state of athletes when they get in the flow. And she said, yes, you're right. I am in the flow. So these are the kinds of altered states that we can all share and participate in and, achieve for ourselves.
Oh, I love that you told that last story, because my mother has always loved gardening, and she's always had such a hard time understanding why I like to ride my bicycle a million miles. And now I can tell her that we're doing the same thing, which I love.
In a certain sense, I think you are doing it. You're getting the same result from doing different.
Exactly. So one final question I've just got to ask you, because my son's name is Riley, but one of the items in your book is the Riley Room. What is that?
The Riley Room was I'll have to go look it up.
It's right at the end. Maybe it was part of your new additions. Here we go. The Riley Room. It's a hall of echoes. It comes from Terry Riley, the musician and environmental artist.
Terry Riley's in C. Many of the highs in the book, many of the altered states come from repetition of sound, repetition of visual imagery, the bombardment that comes when things are repeated to us, oftentimes causes us to enter a new state of awareness. Terry Riley's In C, which is a minimalist piece of music that is so beautiful and so fantastic, and the Riley Room just surrounds you with that. I hadn't realized there's also a room of mirrors that's in the book. And I was thinking, that's not Riley. So it is Terry Riley, and he's still alive, and he's a wonderful composer.
Edward, out of the different sections of the book, was there one that just speaks directly to you? I mean, I know that's a unfair question to ask because it's your book, and you can't break out chapters or different... any one of the 255 and call it your favorite, but is there a section just for yourself or devices and machines or help from others that really is something that continues to speak to you over these decades?
There's a section on loving, and my wife is a couples and sex therapist, and we talk about the notion of falling in love and staying in love all the time. And I think loving is something that everybody has experienced as an altered state. When you even yearn to be with your beloved, you're in an altered state. When you finally hear their voice on the telephone, it transforms you. When you look into their eyes or even touch them, this is something that's out of this world and shuts out the rest of the world for you. So this is an altered state, I think, that so many of us have had the good fortune to experience.
That's a beautiful way to end this conversation.
It all comes back to love.
That's right. Edward Rosenfeld is our guest, and his book, The Book of Highs, 255 Ways to Alter Your Consciousness Without Drugs. We thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a great pleasure to speak with you both. Thank you.
Thank you.